What do you do when the medicine that's supposed to save you stops working? For years, antidepressants seemed like the answer, a simple chemical fix for a chemical problem. Pop a pill, balance your brain, feel better. But here's the uncomfortable truth. Depression rates keep climbing even as antidepressant prescriptions reach record highs. Something doesn't add up. This paradox launched an investigation that would challenge everything we thought we knew about depression. What if the story we've been told, that depression is simply a malfunction in our brains, is incomplete? What if our pain isn't just in our heads, but in our lives, our relationships, our disconnection from what makes us fundamentally human? In 18th century England, a doctor named John Haygarth conducted a sneaky experiment. Patients were flocking to a miraculous metal device called a tractor that supposedly cured chronic pain. Haygarth created fake tractors from wood and watched, astonished, as they worked just as well as the real ones. He'd stumbled upon something profound. Belief itself can heal. Fast forward to the 1990s. Researcher Irving Kirsch, initially a believer in antidepressants, began analyzing clinical trials with growing unease. What he discovered should have made headlines everywhere. Only about 25% of antidepressants' perceived effectiveness came from their chemical properties. The rest? Placebo effect and natural recovery. Even more troubling, pharmaceutical companies had buried studies showing their drugs didn't work, publishing only the favorable results. When Kirsch examined the complete data submitted to the FDA, including all those hidden studies, the picture changed dramatically. The drugs appeared far less effective than anyone believed. Even prominent defenders of antidepressants admitted they might only help for 6 to 20 weeks, with almost no evidence supporting long-term use. Think about what this means. Millions of people take these medications daily, believing they're correcting a chemical imbalance. But the chemical imbalance theory itself, the idea that depression stems from low serotonin, has remarkably thin scientific support. Researchers have directly measured serotonin levels in depressed patients and found no consistent differences from non-depressed people. Some studies even show that depleting serotonin in healthy people doesn't reliably cause depression. This doesn't mean antidepressants never help. Clearly, many people find relief. But perhaps they're working through belief and hope rather than correcting an imbalance that may not exist. More importantly, by focusing exclusively on brain chemistry, we've missed something crucial about why so many of us are suffering. The answers that emerged didn't come from laboratories alone, but from communities fighting eviction, workers reclaiming their labor, and people rediscovering ancient practices of connection. These stories reveal a revolutionary insight. Perhaps we've been looking for healing in all the wrong places. In the 1970s, George Brown and Terrell Harris discovered that specific life events strongly predicted depression. Women experiencing significant negative events were 3 times more likely to become depressed, even those diagnosed with endogenous depression, supposedly purely biological. Pharmaceutical marketing buried this research. If depression stems from isolation, meaningless work, or trauma, we must examine our environments. Consider Joe mixing paint in a Philadelphia hardware store. His repetitive tasks weren't causing a chemical imbalance. They were triggering a rational response to soul-crushing conditions. Michael Marmot's research revealed something counterintuitive. High-responsibility jobs don't cause the most stress. Monotonous, disempowering work does. Your pain isn't irrational. Depression isn't always a disorder to fix, but a message to hear. After years of investigation, a pattern emerged. Depression and anxiety often stem from disconnection, from meaningful work, other people, values that matter, childhood trauma, status and respect, nature, and hope. These unmet fundamental needs leave us vulnerable to profound suffering. Global surveys show most workers feel disengaged. Despite being digitally connected, genuine bonds are deteriorating. You can feel desperately lonely in a crowd because loneliness isn't physical isolation, it's the absence of meaningful connection. Our values have shifted toward extrinsic aspirations, wealth, status, appearance, over intrinsic goals like relationships and growth. This materialistic focus is junk food for the soul. In Berlin's Kadi neighborhood, residents fighting skyrocketing rents gathered at a makeshift protest house. Turkish grandmothers taught German youth to cook, young activists helped elderly neighbors navigate bureaucracy, and everyone gained voice in gardens and assemblies. Months later, residents noticed their depression and anxiety lifting. People who'd taken antidepressants for years needed them less or stopped entirely. The community they built became more potent medicine than pills. This makes evolutionary sense. We're social creatures who evolved in cooperative groups. When cut off from community, we're deprived of something as essential as food or water. Similar patterns appear worldwide. London's social prescribing programs connect isolated patients with community gardening, art classes, and choirs, often outperforming medication alone. Your most alive moments likely involved meaningful connection, working toward shared goals, celebrating together, supporting each other through difficulties. These connections aren't luxuries, they're necessities for well-being. Baltimore Bicycle Works operates on a radical premise. Employees collectively own the business, make decisions democratically, and share profits equitably. Workers report high satisfaction and purpose because they control their environment and see direct rewards. Studies show worker-owned businesses often outperform conventional companies in productivity and retention. Perhaps workplace depression isn't personal failure, but a rational response to dehumanizing conditions. The solution isn't helping individuals cope with toxic environments, but transforming those environments. Beyond work, we need a values revolution. When Sao Paulo banned outdoor advertising in 2007, 15,000 billboards disappeared overnight. People began noticing architecture they'd never seen, feeling mentally lighter and more present. We're bombarded with thousands of messages daily saying happiness comes from buying and achieving. These extrinsic values, focused on external validation, have displaced intrinsic values centered on relationships and contribution. Research shows the more people prioritize extrinsic values, the higher their depression and anxiety. Pursuing wealth creates a hedonic treadmill, where we adapt to each acquisition, requiring ever more to maintain satisfaction. Healing childhood trauma requires reconnection with our authentic selves. Trauma survivors often believe they're fundamentally flawed. The path begins with recognizing it wasn't you, it was what happened to you. Understanding that traumatic experiences shaped their responses allows survivors to view symptoms with compassion rather than shame. In the 1970s, the Canadian town of Dauphin conducted a remarkable experiment called MINCOM. Every resident received a guaranteed basic income, ensuring no one fell below the poverty line. The results were transformative. Hospitalizations dropped 8.5%, mental health improved significantly, and teenagers completed high school instead of dropping out to support their families. This revealed something profound. Economic insecurity creates constant threat that undermines mental health. When people worry about basic needs, their brains remain in survival mode, making psychological thriving nearly impossible. Financial stress directly contributes to depression, anxiety, even suicide. Universal basic income addresses this by providing economic support regardless of work status, creating space to pursue meaningful activities without crushing financial pressure. Critics worry it discourages work, but evidence suggests otherwise. Employment rates remain stable, with increases in entrepreneurship and education. What changes is the quality and meaning of work people choose when survival isn't at stake. Similar benefits emerge from affordable housing, paid family leave, and accessible healthcare. These approaches share a common understanding. Economic security creates psychological safety that allows people to connect, contribute, and flourish. This challenges the narrative that depression is primarily a chemical imbalance requiring medical treatment. Some depression may be a rational response to genuine economic threats. Addressing these threats directly may be more effective than medicating individuals to tolerate insecurity. Perhaps depression isn't a disease, but a signal, a normal response to abnormal circumstances. Reconnection is the antidote to disconnection. While antidepressants may offer temporary relief, lasting healing comes through rebuilding connections essential to human flourishing. Medication can provide crucial support during acute suffering, but pills alone can't reconnect us to meaningful work, supportive communities, intrinsic values, or our authentic selves. The path forward requires both personal and collective action. Individually, we can nurture deep relationships, seek values-aligned work, practice mindfulness to break rumination patterns, spend time in nature, and address past traumas with compassionate support. Collectively, we must reimagine disconnection-fostering structures, creating economic systems providing security rather than chronic stress, workplaces that empower rather than exploit, communities that support rather than isolate. Social prescribing, healthcare providers recommending community gardening, art classes, or volunteer work alongside medication, offers one promising model. Depression isn't just a disease to treat, but often a signal something is wrong in how we're living. By listening to this signal rather than suppressing it, we gain guidance toward more connected, meaningful lives. Reconnection takes time, effort, and support. But unlike symptom management, it offers genuine transformation, not just depression's absence, but joy, meaning, and belonging's presence. We need a new metaphor, not chemical imbalance to correct, but disconnection to heal. Depression's opposite isn't happiness. It's connection to ourselves, others, meaning, and the world. Your pain isn't proof you're broken. It's evidence you're human, needing purpose in work, belonging in community, safety in circumstances, and healing for wounds. The question isn't what's wrong with you, it's what happened to you, and what connections can you rebuild? These aren't fantasies. Cadi residents transformed protest into lasting community. Baltimore workers reclaimed dignity through collective ownership. Canadian towns proved economic security transforms mental health. London doctors prescribe choir membership, and it works. The revolution begins with choices we make today, reaching out to neighbors, questioning dehumanizing workplace practices, prioritizing loved ones over possessions, joining community efforts, supporting policies addressing economic insecurity, speaking openly about mental health. Each act of reconnection challenges the disconnection fueling our epidemic. This reframes depression not as individual failure, but collective crisis requiring collective response. Genuine healing addresses sources, not just symptoms, life circumstances, not just brain chemistry, social transformation, not just personal resilience. Healing begins in the brave choice to reconnect, rebuild, reimagine. The opposite of depression is the presence of meaning, purpose, belonging, found in work that matters, relationships that sustain, communities that support, and a future we believe in.